With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week we're talking about the Liam Payne single Strip That Down and the new series of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
We've also watched the David Lynch film Mulholland Drive for the first time, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Caroline, how did you get on with Anne with an E? I know that it was a show that was kind of close to your heart.
So I finished watching it now. It has 7 episodes in all. When we discussed it last week, I think I'd only watched 4 or 5. And we talked a little bit about the divisive critical reaction it's had.
Yeah, the Anne of Green Gables fandom is just absolutely in disarray over a key character portrayal in the adaptation towards the end of this series. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So spoilers henceforth from what I'm about
spoilers,
to say.
Spoilers.
If you don't want to know what happens, this division is around the character of Matthew, who is Anne's adopted father. In the books, Matthew is what she, Anne, describes all the way through as a kindred spirit. He's her first ally when she moves to Green Gables. Marilla takes a while to come round to the idea of Anne living with them, but Matthew's like, I want her to stay with us forever, she's perfect. And throughout all of Anne's troubles in her teenage and early 20s, Matthew's always there for her. And then Matthew dies really tragically from a heart attack when Anne's quite young. So that's the kind of Matthew arc that everyone is familiar with. In the show, in the 6th and 7th episode, they introduce one of the sort of built upon plots that we talked about, i.e. money troubles, which doesn't really come up in the book at all. But in the show, suddenly a ship with a crop has gone down and Matthew's taken out an ill-advised loan and now they can't pay it and et cetera, et cetera. So there's quite a nice flurry of activity around them all having to like sell stuff and like try and make up money and people donating, et cetera, et cetera. Then in the 7th episode, that hasn't all gone very well. So Matthew tries to kill himself in a very melodramatic and not massively well-acted scene involving a gun that he just randomly has. He doesn't succeed and he seems to get over it quite quickly. And then randomly at the end of the episode, some bad guys that you've seen previously turn up as fake lodgers. And that's the end. So I felt quite let down by this final episode. It doesn't feel like an end to the series at all. I actually spent 10 minutes Googling, like, is this a 2-part series? When is part 2? Because it didn't feel like an end at all. Also, I think the point of division for a lot of fans is Matthew would not act like that.
Well, that's so interesting. But yeah, I wonder if they do make more episodes, whether they'll address it.
Yeah, so it does come to what we were speaking about last week, where I was saying I liked the show so far because although it had introduced new plot elements, they felt in keeping with the characters as drawn by Ellen Montgomery. I don't think that's true of that final plot thing. But it's interesting nonetheless. It's still a very well-produced show and very entertaining.
Well, if any Seriously listeners have thoughts, please do get in touch about Anne with an E. A million miles away, the first thing we're going to talk about this week is Strip That Down, the debut solo single from former One Direction member Liam Payne. Featuring Migos rapper Quavo, The club-friendly song includes lyrics about Coke and Bacardi and Ferraris. A classic Liam Payne kind of song, I guess. You know I used to be in 1D, now I'm free. People want me for one thing, that's not me. I'm not changing the way that I used to be. I just want to have fun and get rowdy. One Coke and Bacardi, sipping lightly. When I walk inside the party, girls on me. F1 inside Ferrari, six kiss me. Girl, I love it when your body grinds on me. Oh, yeah. Baby, oh. You know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me. So this came out on Friday, just gone, so last week. And yeah, it's very kind of like hip-hoppy, but done by a guy who you can tell doesn't necessarily have authentic connection with hip-hop as a genre.
Yes.
So she said very carefully.
I read a really amusing sort of behind-the-scenes account of this song somewhere on the internet, I can't remember where. It's quoting from an interview with Liam where he's saying, you know, I just got to LA and then I got this phone call like, you got to get back to London now, man. It's because Ed Sheeran wanted to talk to me. And then we just like sat down and chatted and stuff. And this song just like emerged.
Yeah. Ed Sheeran and Liam Payne. Like,
yeah.
Behemoths of hip hop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also saw an interview with him that was really bizarre, in which like his whole manner of being just seemed really off. Someone had asked him like, oh, what do you think of like Harry and Niall and Zane's music? And he was like, oh yeah, Niall's gone down the singer-songwriter route, which I respect. Like Harry, I mean, it's not the music I would listen to, da da da. And you feel really like, wow, it would have been so easy for you to say like, wish him all the best, like cool to see that they're like expressing themselves. But he seems to want to kind of like put himself as like, different to that kind of like rocker, like white authentic. So he's trying to, I think, position himself in like this black music genre. And he's also compared it to Rack City, which is just like, they're not similar songs at all. It's so weird. Musically, it's basically, I guess it's trying to be stripped back in keeping with the title Strip That Down, in that it's got that kind of like minimal, it's like very well produced, but there's like not loads of texture and density and stuff going on in the song. But I really feel like the thing that stands out about this song the most is the lyrics.
Yes.
So I think we should go through those.
I think we should do.
So it starts off, you know, I've been taking some time and I've been keeping to myself. I had my eyes on the prize, ain't watching anybody else. Now, this for me, a double entendre. Is he talking about a lady or is he talking about his career? Like, ain't watching any of those other One Direction members. Keeping his eyes on the prize, which is presumably this bad song. Then he goes, but your love, it hit me hard, girl. Yeah, you're bad for my health. I love the cards that I've been dealt. Do you feel the same as well? So we're getting like a sexy veering off there. And then comes the amazing section, lyrics-wise, of the song. You know, I used to be in 1D, now I'm out free. People want me for one thing, that's not me. Is that one thing in reference to the One Direction song One Thing, do we think?
Or One Thing, the musical style associated with One Direction.
Yeah, but they did have, one of their most popular singles was called One Thing, so if that's a little dig, like, bye Liam. Then, I just want to have fun and get rowdy. One Coke and Bacardi, sipping lightly. I love the idea that Liam Payne's idea of fun is getting rowdy by sipping lightly on one Coke and Bacardi. It literally kills me. I just have this image of him like sat on his own, like in the corner, like the VIP area of some Mayfair club, just like with pursed lips and a little straw.
Yes.
Just like sipping lightly on his single Coke and Bacardi. Oh, it's so grim. Then, when I walk inside the party, girls on me. Ugh.
Are they though?
Also,
you have a kid now, Liam.
Yeah, like to go down that whole like weird parent shaming route just to like redress the sexism. He's a dad now. Then F1 type Ferrari, six gear speed. I love the idea that he was like, I love this Ferrari, but what gear speed does it have? It's like cool to look at, but like tell me, is it a 5-gear speed or a 6-gear speed? Because I'm only interested in the latter. And then just like completely incongruously again, girl, I love it when your body grinds on me. Like, I can't even. This is a mess.
This is a mess. It's a hot mess. It's the song that Ed Sheeran wrote before he wrote Shape of You, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote this one. He was like, not sure this is good enough.
This is not good.
I'm going to write a better Trop House chart dominating club banger. Aha, this one, Shape of You, is better.
Yeah. Oh, God. And then there's just like a lot more of the same, really. You know, I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me, is the chorus. I think you kind of get where it's going, basically, from that. But for me, it's really, like, truly embarrassing in a way that I, like, can't. It just gives me a full body cringe. I don't know about you.
Oh, I made myself listen to it 3 times all the way through, because I was like, you're going to talk about it on the podcast. Oh, you need to have paid attention to this. And that was quite painful.
Yeah.
And I would like to not listen to it again, please.
Yeah. In its defense, it is the kind of song that I can imagine just like doing quite well on Radio 1, purely because it's so like an amalgamation of like every other like boring pop song on the radio that it kind of just washes over people's ears.
Yeah, in sort of terms of auditory sound, it's got all of the elements that are doing well in the charts at the moment.
Yeah, but that is kind of like one of the reasons that I kind of don't buy it, because it is just like, oh yeah, we'll go for some of these tropical vibes that people like. We'll like make sure that there's like some sort of credible hip-hop voice on it for like 3 seconds, and then we'll like just basically have a very generic overproduced pop song for the most part.
I have no idea how accurate a predictor this is, but I, in googling about this song, ended up on a website called Official Trending Charts or something, which is predicting that it's going to stick around in the top 10 for a while, if not maybe get to number one this week.
Oh well, I guess begrudging congratulations will be in order to Liam Payne if that happens, but I don't like where his brand is going. It makes me deeply uncomfortable. Have you seen the Payne chain?
I saw the Instagram of him doing it to Nick Grimshaw. What can you explain it to me? What is
the Payne chain? Is just basically Liam has started wearing like heavy gold jewelry because he thinks that he can get away with that and that it makes him look cool, when obviously it doesn't.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he just can't pull that off. I think some of the 4 other One Direction members have, like, taken the piss a little bit, and somewhere in that kind of, like, banterous zone, the Payne chain as a nickname emerged. And he's been, like, taking his necklace off, his big heavy chain, and putting it on other people and being like, yeah, do you want to go on the Payne chain or whatever? I mean, none of this should be that surprising to former One Direction fans who probably became acquainted with the Big Payne remixes. Every time One Direction brought out a single, there would be like, you know, they would release the single and it would be the one song, but then there'd be like some sort of like heavier dance remix and then something along that lines, which would be called the Big Payne remix. And it would be Liam's attempt to like make a more club friendly track out of it. And they were always terrible. And like Big Payne, doesn't that just like make you just do an internal but yeah, so I guess it's not that surprising, but because he was always the one who would like wear the suit at the award ceremony and like address the media, and like people used to call him like Daddy Payne because he was quite serious, right?
He was the grown-up one.
Yeah, he was like the father of the boys. That I kind of didn't expect him to go fully down this route that he's gone down. And it's sad.
It is sad, but in one sense, I'm finding it interesting in a more meta way. Boy band splits up, lots of solo debuts.
Mm.
And obviously in all of the boys' minds, it's like, oh, finally I get to do me. I get to do the work that I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And for, you know, Harry and Zayn and Niall, they've, you know, taken a kind of slightly genre diversion. Mm-hmm. They've, you know, formatted their personal brand in a particular way.
Yeah, you can see it happening with all, you're so right. It's like Zayn's gone down the R&B route. Yeah. I think like pretty successfully. I quite like the Zayn album.
Pretty credibly as well.
Yeah. Niall's doing like blue-eyed singer-songwriter with his guitar around his neck, which like, it's not quite, I'm not quite buying it, but like pretty much he's like 80% there, whatever. Harry's doing this like kind of weird, like authentic rock thing. And then I don't even know what Louis's up to. Louis's not really up to anything right now. But then you've got Liam doing this like bizarre, like, yeah, I'm like a hip hop person. And you're like, no, you're not a hip hop person. You're just so not. Like, I don't get it. It doesn't feel, it almost doesn't feel genuine to me. Mm. It feels like he's decided that this is like the best niche for him. And it's just not working.
No, it is not. As a footnote to this, I wanted to ask you your opinions on Harry Styles's appearance on Carpool Karaoke.
Oh yeah, loved it. Really liked the whole bit where they swapped outfits.
Yes, I was going to mention that too. As someone, you know, you've formerly written pieces analysing Harry's fashion choices, of which we are big fans.
Yeah.
And here was a whole video where we just got to see Harry wearing lots of different shirts.
It was really great because obviously James Corden likes to take the piss out of himself and his kind of like what he sees as a non-Hollywood, you know, physicality. And then there's Harry who has this like very much like, I don't know, smoothie only body that just like looks a bit ridiculous and Hollywood. It's all very problematic in various ways. James Corden puts on like an ugly jumper jumper and then gives it to Harry Styles, and they kind of like go round in a circle like this, where it's like James wears a golf jumper now, James is wearing like a bright gold tiny latexy top, etc. And each time it obviously looks kind of laughable on James Corden, and somehow Harry Styles like gets away with it, even when it's like a string vest, like a black string vest, it still looks cool on him, which is quite revealing about fashion and something that I should remember when I'm like on websites buying clothes and I'm like, that model looks amazing, so will I, and then you're like, oh no, this is how you've been conditioned to see beauty.
Yes, it was, I really liked it, the sequence. It's for, you know, people like me who watch Carpool Karaoke with great intensity, you will recognise this as a step on from the trope that they used with in the Bruno Mars one, where
I did see that one.
Bruno Mars tries on a variety of hats.
Yeah,
and
I loved that.
Bruno Mars's Carpool Karaoke is hands down my favourite one so far.
No way, I didn't even like peg you as a Bruno Mars fan.
I'm not. I just find him really, really delightful in that.
Great.
And I often watch it when I feel a bit sad because, as he points out to James Corden, because you know Bruno Mars likes to wear quite like flowy silk stuff, and he says to James Corden, like, it's just impossible to be unhappy when you're wearing something this breathable.
What a line. Yeah, I mean, we've talked at length before about our like James Corden in car theory, but it is just such a great segment. Will Liam get one?
That's an interesting question, actually, because I another thing I find interesting in my over analysis of Carpool Karaoke is who gets to do it, because I feel like
they're big names.
Yeah, initially it was obviously a bit of a punt for the star to agree to do it, but now it's such an established popular format, it trends on YouTube for days. Presumably people are queuing up to do it. So, like, for instance, would Iggy Azalea get to do it now, whereas she was actually one of the first people to do it when they first introduced it? Harry Styles, I think, to the non-aficionado, is the most recognisable face from One Direction.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that his solo debut would be accompanied by this. But
and they have, like, a friendship, don't they?
They do. Do you want any of the other members? Zayn didn't do one.
Yeah. I think Zayn wouldn't do it because he's so like, oh, like being accessible and fun is like not really part of his image. But for Liam, I feel like that's going to be quite important. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Taking some time and I've been keeping to myself. I had my eyes upon the prize, ain't watching anybody else. But your love, it hit me hard, girl. Yeah, you're bad for my health. I love the cards that I've been dealt. Do you feel the same as...
The next thing we're going to talk about is The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is a Netflix original series created by Tina Fey and Robert Carlock. Now, in its third series, it follows Kimmy, played by Ellie Kemper, as she adjusts to 21st century life in New York City after being held in an underground bunker by a cult leader, played by John Hamm, for 15 years. It also stars Titus Burgess as her roommate, struggling actor Titus Andromedon.
Yeah, who is the best thing in it, I think.
He is hands down the best thing in it.
And so funny.
This series three, in my opinion, has taken a turn for the worse.
Oh.
Sadly, it just is not funny anymore like it used to be.
That's so sad. Why do you where do you place the like drop off?
Most of the comedy was originally rooted in the fact that, you know, Kimmy's just escaped from this really awfully traumatic situation. She has never seen a smartphone. She doesn't understand how the internet works, but she's determined to turn over a new leaf and like make the best of the life that's been given back to her. So that.
It's a bit like Big almost, isn't it? Where most of the comedy comes from, this idea that like here's this like person who was a child from a different time trying to interact as an adult in a modern scenario.
Exactly. But it's been three series now. I think she would probably understand how you know, phones work now.
Yeah.
But there's still she's still at the same level of being completely astonished by everything. And as a shtick, it's kind of got a bit
getting old.
Got a bit tired. Which is a shame because I think other elements of her personal development are still really interesting. And there is one bit, which I think is in the first or the second episode, where, so the, what's his name? The Reverend Richard Wayne Gary Wayne.
John Hamm.
Yeah, he's in prison now. And he is actually apparently legally married to Kimmy, but he wants a divorce. So that he can marry somewhere else.
Sort of with her like receiving divorce papers, don't we, in the first episode?
Yeah. And then John Hamm's fiance, played by Laura Dern, turns up and to try and like beg Kimmy to sign the papers. And she, one of the things she says to try and persuade Kimmy is, you know, it's all just so hard for him, you know, it's like living in a Noel Coward play. And then Kimmy comes back with this line where she said, yeah, if Noel Coward was really a coward who rapes everybody.
Mm.
And she still has some really brilliant lines like that, where she
cuts through the humour and finds the trauma at the heart of the show.
Yeah, but they don't pursue that ever. It's always just these one-liners that then disappear. And that's basically my problem with the whole thing so far, is that it's got some really funny, like, line-by-line writing in it, but overall, I feel like the series hasn't developed or moved on.
Yeah. I do like you say, some of the line-by-line humour in it. I love Titus's punchlines, and they always do a very sort of, like, what I would consider a classic joke in these things, where they set the sentence, sets up making you think someone's going to say something, and then they, like, come in with the subversion right at the end of the sentence. So I really liked, for example, when he's been on some cruise, but he's had to, like, there's been some sort of disaster on the cruise, and he's, like, swum ashore, and he comes back and he says something like, I wanted to come back from this cruise with money in my pocket, and a real, actual pocket. And, like, things like that really just, like, surprised me and made me really laugh. So yeah, I love his character and the lines he gets.
And I love his, like, pop culture references. And the part of this new series that's been very heavily touted is Titus's Lemonade parody.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. When does that appear?
Maybe in the second episode? I can't remember. But the very weak plot setup for it is that he thinks he sees his boyfriend Mikey, you know, he's been away for a few months, he thinks he sees his boyfriend Mikey, you know, going about with another gay guy, and he's like, oh, he's cheating on me. So he goes full Lemonade.
Right.
And
is
that,
it good?
It is funny. It is funny, but maybe not as funny as it was built up to be.
Yeah.
Sadly, you know, there are some funny lines in it when, you know, unlike Beyonce, he's not doing it on a closed set. So someone interrupts him and he has a little meltdown, like, excuse me, I'm lemonading here, which is quite funny. But it goes on for quite a long time, and you are aware that you're just watching a character wearing a flowy yellow thing and wielding a baseball bat. I don't know. It reminds me a bit of when I used to try and watch SNL when I was a teenager, because I was sort of vaguely aware from the early internet that SNL was this hilarious thing that Americans loved, and it was really cool, and that, you know, I would like it. And whenever I did used to track it down, I used to watch it in complete bewilderment, like, I don't understand any of this. This is not funny at all. These jokes are all falling really flat. And I do still feel like that about a lot of SNL sketches, that they're so in the moment, and they're so rooted to very specific references.
Yeah.
And some of Kimmy Schmidt now feels like that to me.
Yeah. Well, will you slog on with the rest?
I read a review on Refinery29 that quite accurately reflected my own views on this, in which the author said that it's not bad, it's fine to have on in the background while you are cooking or cleaning. It just isn't the show that it once was. And that's broadly how I feel. Like, I probably will watch to the end while I'm tidying.
Yeah.
But not in the kind of, oh, I'm going to binge it all like I was before.
Well, again, seriously, listeners, do get in touch with your thoughts on Kimmy Schmidt season 3.
Fascinating transition.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/spoken. That's LinkedIn.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So last time I recommended to Anna that she give David Lynch's film Mulholland Drive a go, given, you know, it's Twin Peaks season, the new series has just started, we just had our quiz. We're very much in David Lynch's world at the moment, it feels like.
Yeah.
So Anna, how did it go?
Yeah, so I went and saw it at the cinema because they're screening it a lot at the moment due to Twin Peaks, which I think is probably a really good thing. I think this would have been a hard thing. It's a long movie. It's a very weird movie. I think it would have been a hard thing to concentrate on, like on my laptop in my bedroom for 2.5 hours. But I went and like properly immersed myself into it. And yeah, I really liked it. But I was also like, whoa, I didn't understand anything that just happened.
Yes. Did you spend like hours after you got home reading conspiracy theories on the internet?
Well, I haven't done any of that yet because I was planning to, but then we kind of got caught up in like some big news events very sadly this week, so I haven't been able to devote myself to it as I would have liked, but I'm definitely going to go back and do that. What was there anything that you gleaned from your time online?
Well, basically there are no answers out there, but there are lots of questions. Also, David Lynch on his website has a page that you can easily find where he lists like 10 clues or 10 things or something that he thinks
he's such a troll
will explain it to you. And I actually, one day when I have time, I'm going to rewatch the film with that in front of me.
Because, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you're right, he is such a troll. That one of them is like, everything you need to know you find out in the first 90 seconds of the film or before the credits or something like that.
I don't even remember how it starts.
Yeah,
I know. It starts with the two guys. That's really weird, and then you don't hear from them ever again. And there's the weird person behind the bins.
Ugh. It's very odd. So insofar as we can explain what this film is like for listeners who haven't seen it, you know, it's a film about an actress or two actresses in Hollywood and jealousy and female friendship and desire. And yeah, like, I guess there's a kind of murder mystery element to it.
Yeah, almost. It's very weird. Like, there's a lot about kind of acting and identities in it, right? She comes and she's an actress and she's very like wide-eyed and she's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in Tinseltown. And it feels really weird. Like, yeah. You're like, wait, is this a bad actress? Like, it's Naomi Watts just bad at this? And then as it goes on, that kind of becomes peeled back a little bit and you see her like acting. And when she's acting, she's really, really good. And then it just, that she meets this woman and then that woman takes on a new identity and is wearing a wig, and like there's a lot of stuff about like pretending to be different people, but it's just never resolved and you never know who anyone actually is or like what the fuck is even going on.
What the hell is happening? I know. So one of the reasons I've read for why it's so confusing is because apparently he originally made half of it as a TV pilot for a Twin Peaks-esque neo-noir series. Didn't get picked up for anyone, so he finished it as a movie.
Wow, that's so funny. One thing I did really like about this movie is I am an obsessive of scenes in movies that are like some, like either in movies when they go to the movies or like when they go to the theater or when they're watching TV. Like I love to watch people watching things in movies. And there's a great scene where the two lead women go to a club and they watch someone sing like a Roy Orbison song in Spanish, and then they like tear well up loads and loads and loads. And I loved that scene. I just thought that was amazing. Really, really cool.
That is really amazing. Did you also find the moment when the movie pivots, let's say, when she's looking at the tiny blue box and then suddenly the name of its character, like she's just not there?
Yeah.
Did that really freak you out?
Yeah. The whole last, what is it, like hour, maybe half an hour? I don't know. Like, it's just all so weird. And that's the stuff that I just like don't get at all and that I would like to read up on and maybe poke some corners of my brain. But yeah, it was really interesting, and it's one of those films that afterwards you're like, wait, are you fucking with me or was this good? I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think I went to see it quite late on a Sunday night, and when I came out of the, I went to the Picture House Central in Central London, and when I came out, Piccadilly was kind of almost empty and I was just really confused. I was like, what have I just watched and where did everybody go?
Yeah, it is so bizarre. So yeah, but glad I watched it, especially in time for Twin Peaks season.
I feel like it definitely, I wouldn't say I like understand Twin Peaks any more than I did before, but it definitely like fleshed out my context.
Yeah, and there are definite parallels between the two.
Absolutely.
So what about for next week? Do we have a recommend in the inbox?
We do. We have a really great one from Alana. So thank you very much, Alana. She is recommending us a new Channel 4 comedy series called Loaded. And the brief description she gives us here is, Josh, Vinny, Ewan and Watto have just sold their startup video game company for a clean $246 million, the culmination of a billion man hours of blood, sweat, toil, coding, shouting, swearing, fighting, hugging, pitching, grinding and occasionally showering. And she says, it's only 2 episodes in so far and I'm really enjoying it. It's by no means perfect. Reviews have been mixed, with the comment that the main characters are essentially all dickheads being mentioned more than once, a fact that I actually find makes it slightly more enjoyable. And then she just lists some high points, one of which is that Samuel Anderson from the History Boys is in it,
great.
Which is definitely a point in our favour. And then this is my favourite thing she says. There is an argument about how it is, in fact, definitely feasible to live in centre parks if you're smart about it, and how the riverboat waterways of England are highly commutable.
Wow, this sounds fun.
I'm really interested in this. I want it to be like a British version of Silicon Valley, somehow crossed with the in-betweeners.
Okay, well, we'll investigate and see whether it is, in fact, that. Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including iTunes, where you can also leave us a review if you like.
At our website, seriouslypod.com, you can find all our back episodes, plus our specials on Home Alone, Gilmore Girls, Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.